come early just because we're running early. Did everybody sign in? If you didn't,
we didn't get that chance.
Please go ahead. Please go ahead and do that. That'll keep the clerks, the law clerks, happy.
If they're not happy, we're not happy.
While they're signing in, Mr. Dolgan, are you here for the Kersey case?
I was here observing the room, and I can check on the status of the court.
If you wouldn't mind, while we're doing this, we'd appreciate that.
Thanks.
We are early, so he's not late yet. Thank you. All right, Mr. Ritter. Sorry, didn't see.
Okay.
We still have
got one down
signing
there.
In. Yep. You have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, ma'am, if I may have 2 minutes.
Absolutely, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, I am Todd Ritter. I represent the appellate Daniel Thornsberry, who is on appeal from an order of the Chesterfield Circuit Court, which terminated his parental rights with respect to his two children. They were minor children of the ages of 9 and 11. When they were removed in October of 2015, the order of termination came in November of 2016 after a de novo hearing in the Chesterfield Circuit Court. We have assigned two bases for error. One is that the trial court committed error in finding that there was clear and convincing evidence to satisfy the standard that the termination was in the best interest of the children, and secondarily, that the trial court erred by finding, by clear and convincing evidence, that the appellant had not substantially corrected the conditions which led to the children's placement in foster care within a 12-month period without good cause. I would suggest to the court that the law is very clear that when we're dealing with a termination of parental rights case, this is essentially the death penalty for a parent. It is a grave and it is a drastic and irreversible action. And respecting that principle, the court has repeatedly said that the circumstances in which a parent would suffer termination of parental rights should be rare. This is not one of those rare instances where this parent should have been judged to be irredeemable based upon the record in the case and what had transpired since October of 2015. In fact, I would suggest that a fair characterization of this record was that the appellant had substantially remedied most, though not all, of the conditions that had concerned the department throughout the case. And the
wasn't one of the major conditions that appellant did not remedy his substance abuse addiction, his difficulty?
I think that's a fair characterization, Your Honor, to say that that was a major concern. I do want to highlight, however, in terms of judging just how strong of a concern that was, the history of the case was that in October, when the department first received this report, they were concerned about his treatment of the children. They were then concerned with his substance abuse issues. They were also concerned about the physical condition of the home, but they did not initiate a removal at that point. They went through several weeks, and really what happened, the major point that led to the removal was that there was concerns that he was allowing an alleged abuser of the children to be in their presence. This was an individual known as Grandpa Gatto, that's in the materials, who was his mother's boyfriend.
And along those lines, when CPS wanted to interview one of the children, he failed to bring that child for the interview, didn't he?
That's true. That's
and
true.
That could also be construed as a neglect or a failure to acknowledge the seriousness.
It certainly, at the outset, looks very bad for Mr. Thornsberry, and I acknowledge that. And we can understand the department's actions, perhaps, at that point in October. But what I've indicated in the brief about that issue was two things, essentially. Number one, and this is addressed mainly in the second assignment, which was the death of Mr. Thornsberry's mother and how that might have impacted his ability to remedy the conditions.
Well, that occurred 10 months into his 12-month period to remedy the conditions that brought about the foster care situation.
That's true. It was August.
So, I mean, it seems to me, you know, I gather the circuit court rejected that as excusing his failure to comply or to failure to remedy because it occurred so late in the period that was given to him. So, you know, while we could all appreciate that the death of a parent will sort of have an impact on your ability, it seems to me, from a clear and convincing standpoint, which is, you know, the standard of review here, it's hard to argue with the trial courts, you know, putting very little weight on that given that at the point in time in which that occurred.
Well, I believe I'm obligated to argue with the trial court on that contention.
You're obligated to argue a lot of things, but my point is simply that, you know, we don't do a de novo review. I'm hearing you
understood.
Argue that if we should reach a different conclusion based upon what was presented, and that, of course, is not our standard of review. Our standard of review is whether the evidence was sufficiently clear and convincing that the trial court could have reached the decision that it did.
Very true. The point I was trying to get to there was just that with respect to the concerns over Grandpa Gatto, there was the fact that as the case evolved, you know, his mother had died. Grandpa Gatto was no longer in the picture, had no need to be in the picture of Mr. Thornsberry's life any longer at all. And in addition, the point that I had made is that, remember, Mr. Thornsberry, the appellant, had some information that no one else has. And so from the outside looking in, that looks indifferent, perhaps careless, that he would allow this man to be in the same home with his children after receiving a report that he had abused them. But Mr. Thornsberry was very clear. Look, if I thought he had abused my children, I would be in jail. We would be talking about a different appellate issue altogether. He said, I'm not going to let somebody abuse my children. But the report from the child had been that this had happened when Mr. Thornsberry was at work, and that Mr. Thornsberry himself had actually intervened to prevent the attempted abuse. So to Mr. Thornsberry, from his state of mind, he knew for a fact that certain things that were being said there were not true. And he made that clear by saying that, you know, I know that this particular day I wasn't at work. The children would have been with me. And he certainly would have recalled if he had intervened to stop ongoing abuse or attempted abuse. So he didn't believe the allegation.
But isn't it questionable judgment to put the child in that back into that scenario, even if there might have been an issue?
I guess the answer to that is, to him, by his mind, what he was hearing, there was no might. He knew that the allegation was false from his state of mind. So again, I'll agree that the department, acting on the limited information, that they need to act strongly to protect the child and the children. But with respect to Mr. Thornsberry, perhaps in hindsight, if you understand from his perspective, you can see why he may have taken that allegation a little bit differently than they would have liked for him to. In any event, in terms of remedying that condition, again, Mr. Gatto was no longer a part of their lives because the relationship between he and the mother was gone by virtue of the fact that she had passed away. And so, again,
but that doesn't change his judgment call that he made earlier.
I guess it doesn't change his judgment call, but at this point now, jumping ahead to November 2016, when the circuit court is hearing this, we have to say, all right, whether we agree with that judgment or not, what has happened now? Where are we now? And the point was is that where they were now on that issue, which I would suggest was the critical one that led to the removal, there was no longer a concern that this gentleman was going to be a threat to the children. In addition to that, Mr. Thornsberry had addressed issues as far as his living condition. When he was back in October, when the department went out to investigate his home, it was in a state of disarray. Apparently a tree had fallen on it, and you can imagine what was going on in the home at that time.
Well, he was currently living above the Club Rouge, where he was going to try to make a one-bedroom apartment into a two-bedroom apartment for his children, and he lived there until 2 o'clock in the morning days.
That's correct.
Wasn't that a source of some significant concern?
I think it would be a concern. The babysitting arrangements with him working so late would have been a logistical concern, I'm sure. However, his testimony was that he did have a place. There was no indication it wasn't a sound place. He had set up a partition in order for the children to have a bedroom. Its location next to his employer, which happened to be a gentleman's club, might be a concern to some folks, but I would suggest...
Or a place to put young teenage girls.
I understand that concern. But nonetheless, he had also testified that he was in the process of looking for other employment. So, you know, I hope the court will have some sympathy with him, is that he's got to juggle a lot of things here while he's trying to get his children back.
Well, does this case really, does it essentially just come down to, given that he's made at least some steps in the right direction, toward, I don't think anybody would dispute that, towards remedying this, but did not obviously remedy all of the conditions that created the foster care situation, whether we would say as a matter of law that the circuit court was wrong in essentially concluding that you didn't go far enough?
I think that's the issue. The question is clearly...
So how do we draw the line without doing a de novo review, I guess, then?
Well, I would suggest to the court that when you look at the reason that he may not have addressed this last lingering concern, as I was indicating, the substance abuse problem, is that what Mr. Thornsberry himself had asked for was just an additional 3-month period. Give me 3 months, I've got a place, I have employment, I've done your psychological assessment, I've done your parenting assessment, I've kept my regular visitation with the children. That was said to have gone overall well. It was said that he was receptive to parenting instruction. Admittedly, I still haven't shown you that I've gotten through the substance abuse issue.
Well,
and he's an addict.
Well, the problem is the position you're putting us in is that sounds like you're asking us to say, as a matter of law, the court should have given him more time. And and while I might have given him more time if I had been the circuit court judge in this case, how do we say as a matter of law when you're wrong in not giving? Because obviously there are some cases that come along where it clearly would be fruitless.
Yes,
Your Honor. I think, at least implicitly, reached that conclusion here. So how do we say that they're wrong? How would you rate that opinion?
Well, not fruitless, I would say, in this case. It's going to be a difficult issue for the court, and I sympathize that you're trying to craft rules of law that can be applicable to a multitude of cases. And the fact is that when we have termination of parental rights cases or custody cases or cases of just of this nature, they're going to be very fact-specific, and no case is going to be the same. And I understand it's going to be hard to distill a principle, perhaps, that would be usable all of the time. But what I would suggest to the court is that in this particular case, given the strong relationship he had with the children, he was... essentially, it. The mother was not in the picture, and these are children that are now 10 and 12 by the time of the termination. He was the strongest relationship that they had in their lives, and he had shown the participation through his regular visitation, and he had done a number of these things, and he indicates to the court, I haven't addressed the substance abuse completely, but he does indicate, I am sober now, and I needed time. He was dealing with the loss of his mother, which I think is a substantial event. The trial court seemed to suggest that these kinds of losses happen to everybody, and they certainly do, and we have to plug through those losses and do what we can. I understand that point. However, when you are an addict and suffering from the disease of addiction and you're trying to address these issues, and at the same time you're trying to satisfy the department on all these other fronts, including where you're living and the employment and the assessments and the waivers and all of the things that you also have to do during the course of a foster care case, it is not, I think, asking too much for someone to say, could you give me a little more time to address this substance abuse. After all, going back to the beginning of the case when the department knew about the substance abuse, that was not alone enough for them to initiate the removal. It was in a combination of circumstances, including the concerns over substance abuse, but also the physical condition of the home, which he had fixed, and the concern over this individual, Grandpa Gatto, that had been in the presence of the children, and whether or not Mr. Thornsberry was going to protect the children. So given that this was the one remaining point that he had to attack, we're suggesting that in light of the loss of his mother and what might be in a detour for him as a result of that, that the court ought not to have terminated his parental rights at that time. And I see I have 20 seconds.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for DSS.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Emily Russell, and I represent the Chesterfield County Department of Social Services. There are two issues central to this case as we see it. The first is whether or not the first assignment error was properly preserved for appeal in this case. And the second is whether or not the death of Mr. Thornsberry's mother was good cause, such that he, although he was unable to remedy substantially the conditions that required the girls to come into care and to remain in the foster care placement, that should be overlooked and that he should have been given more time because of the death of his mother. On the first issue, the record is clear that the best interest argument was not preserved for appeal.
Well, there was no express objection, that's certainly clear. But it seems to me our jurisprudence, Brown versus Commonwealth, Helms versus Mansfield, it seems to me that was the only issue in the case. And Mr. Ritter made his client's position pretty clear on the record. So although no express objection was made, the trial court certainly was well aware of what its legal position was, wasn't it?
Well, respectfully, it was a different attorney at the trial court, and I would argue that there are two findings that need to be made, and that one of them is best interest, the other is whether or not there was a substantial remedying of the conditions that required the children to come into care. The objection that was not made on the basis of best interest. There was no objection made on the basis of best interests, and I would say that under the case law, Edwards v. Commonwealth in particular, there must be an express contemporaneous objection on that particular issue so that the trial court is given an opportunity to understand the objection and clarify the record if...
How do you deal with the Supreme Court's decision in Brown, which says, quote, if a trial court is aware of a litigant's legal position and the litigant did not expressly waive such arguments, the arguments remain preserved for appeal, close quotes.
I would say the litigant's position in that situation was relevant to his substance abuse. He never mentioned best interest. There's nothing in the record where he said, I have a great relationship with my daughters, they should come home to me, I have been the only parent figure in their lives. None of that is on the record. So I would say that the focus on best interests was not made evident by his attorney. And therefore, we would argue that it was not preserved. Should the court reach the merits of the best interest argument, I think it's clear that from the case law that the trial court has broad discretion in making determinations relevant to the children's best interests, and that there's a presumption that all of the evidence before the judge was considered and that he made his decision in the children's best interest. In particular, when there is an allegation of sexual abuse in a child welfare case, there is, this court has acknowledged that the allegations of sexual abuse will lead to a trumping of the parental rights of the parents because it's in the best interest of the children to, in order to promote the best interest of the children. Moving on to the second issue, which I think is really the heart of this case. The record contains, the record contains ample evidence that Mr. Thornsberry did not comply with the requirements of the plan, even though he understood them. He had the resources available to him from the department, his parent support worker, the GAL. He admitted at trial, he said, I knew what I was supposed to do and I didn't do it. And I would submit that to your point, Judge Humphreys, his mother did die very late in the process. The court, the statute contemplates that there is a time constraint on your ability to substantially remedy the conditions that bring the child into care. And in this case, there was nothing accelerated about this case. It moved in precise time with the deadlines anticipated from the time of removal until a TPR happened. In this case, he had 10 months. He had failed 9 out of 10 drug screens before his mother died. There's nothing in the record relevant to his mother's death until August when he missed a permanency planning hearing. He also didn't testify about his mother's death at trial. It's amazing. I mean, it was raised by his attorney in closing argument, but he didn't even mention it. So I think it's disingenuous to say that that was good cause. And I think that good cause has really only been found by this court to overcome the inability to substantially remedy the conditions that brought the children into care and required them to come into care when the parents did not have a full opportunity to remedy those conditions, specifically in Crawley when the mother was incarcerated for 2 years. In this case, like I said before, he had all the resources available to him to make these changes. He chose not to. He chose to withdraw his consent for the department to follow up with his substance abuse rehabilitation clinics. He refused 15 drug tests. And he essentially didn't do anything different. And I think that Judge Rockwell recognized that in his finding, that your circumstances today are no different than they were a year ago. Let's see. I think that the only other thing that I would point out in this case is that well, I'm going to leave it at that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, counsel. And Ms. Piper, thank you for being here.
Yes, ma'am. I support the department's position.
Well, we appreciate your services as guardian ad litem.
Thank you.
Well, I see I have, it says 20 seconds. Do I have 20 seconds or 2 minutes?
No, it's 20 seconds,
okay.
But we'll go ahead and give you a little more.
Well, I will suggest that the issue was properly preserved. Certainly the trial court was aware of the issue. It's not a nuanced issue. This is the core issue in the case, whether the trial court's determination reaches the best interest of the child. Mr. Thornsberry certainly didn't waive the issue expressly, and so I think that my prior counsel had done enough to preserve that issue for review on the merits.
I apologize for putting that on you.
and secondly, in terms of the request for more time, again, I think what I've highlighted from the record is that this was a parent who, although admittedly was not perfect in his performance on the plan, had definitely taken some steps. And given that he suffers the disease of addiction, but given the strength of his relationship with these two children, it merited giving him additional time. And it was certainly a legitimate good cause to consider that his mother had died during this process and he was having to cope with that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll come down and recounsel now.